Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, July 29th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to www.tnt.hover.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Becky Worley.
And I'm Dr. Kiki.
Behind the board is our kick-ass producer, Eric Lanigan.
Oh, there we go. That makes up for yesterday. I had no adjective.
I know. We had to make up for it. This is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day for you. And Becky is just off of the plane that she got on yesterday. She's been flying around the world since then, right?
Circumnavigation. That's pretty
just
awesome.
Just racking up a few of the frequent miles, you know, frequent flyer miles. So, but anything to be back with my TNT.
You are dedicated. Thank you so much, because I know that's not easy. And thank you for having Fremenized again on today's
the
show.
The red carpet club turns my eyes blue. What can I say? I'm working on the lighting in the joint.
If you're listening to the audio version of the show, you've got to go find the video version when it posts. Because
No.
Becky has never looked more like a desert inhabiting still suit wearing Fremen than she does right now.
Oh, I'm ready. Muad'Dib.
Call us a worm. On to the Android wallpaper scare. The great Android wallpaper scare of 2010. This comes out of Black Hat. John Herring, chief executive, and Kevin Mahaffey, chief technology officer at Lookout, gave a talk about some apps they found that purported to be wallpaper apps, but then took a lot of your data off of your phone. Like, you know, your phone number and your voicemail password and a few other things that you probably don't want them to have.
Your SIM card number.
Definitely a
little funky because anywhere between 1 million and 4 million copies of this app have been downloaded. And it's definitely caused a stir because folks are concerned about how locked down the Android apps are. Do you think that's a fair characterization?
Yeah, there has been concern about the openness of the Android marketplace. It is curated, but it is a lot more open than, for example, the Apple iPhone store. The data from this particular wallpaper utility would be sent to www.imnet.us, which is a site that is apparently in Shenzhen, China. So when we first read all these reports, they're like, this app steals your data. It's probably nefarious. This is, you know, an example of a malicious app existing on the Android marketplace. That hasn't turned out to be exactly true, right?
No, it's from a company that goes by the name of Jackie Wallpaper, and it's looking like nothing malicious has been done with the data yet, but I contacted Google, and they say they've suspended the application while they investigate it further, and they are really concerned that their perception of the safety of their app store and their apps is really prominent for people. They say, hey, we sandbox all of our apps to prevent malicious applications on the device. They limit the sandboxing limits an application's interaction with other data, system resources, and other apps. But this one specifically said, we're going to get info about your phone calls. That's what it warned you of in its own privacy statement. About your phone calls? A wallpaper app? That should have been a red flag, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the blog posting that Kevin put up from mylookout.com, which Lookout is the company that gave the talk, said that this was part of the App Genome Project. The goal of that project was to help make people aware of the capabilities of mobile apps so they can be more vigilant while downloading. And they also say in this posting, while this sort of data collection from a wallpaper application is certainly suspicious, there's no evidence of malicious behavior.
Right, but them collecting it, what are they going to do with it once they have it? Why do they have it if they're only a wallpaper app? And I think that's one of the major differences between downloading an app from the Android marketplace and the iPhone app Apple marketplace is that the security and the privacy settings that you say, you read them and you say, you decide whether or not it's okay for this app to take this information from you or to have access to certain information on your phone before you download it. And they let you know what information they're going to have access to and what they're going to want. But sometimes you have to be the arbiter of that and say, really? Wallpaper app? Phone information? Why is that something? Do I really want this particular wallpaper app? Maybe I should go get something else. Do I need My Little Pony on my phone that badly?
Yes.
Yeah, but you know what? This is really egregious. Although you do need My Little Pony, and so does Tom, apparently. I think that it's really a pain in the butt to be responsible for knowing all of the uses of my data for all of the apps that I have. And I think this makes a really good statement for having a lockdown environment. I've lived on the Wild West that is the internet and had to deal with so much malware that I would be willing to have a much more controlled environment, even if that means losing a few apps. Now, I mean, I think that's a tough, everybody's going to have a position on that, and it seems like maybe there's a better space in the middle. And Google does say that if an app developer continues to, let me use their words exactly, abusive developers can be blocked from using the Android market for repeated or egregious violations, and any programs or applications deemed to be in violation of their policies are removed from the market. But it makes Apple's rigorous testing on the front side seem pretty appealing.
Yeah, one aspect of the article that was written talks about that 47% of Android apps access some kind of third party code, while 23% of iPhone apps do. And it also says that the coders don't necessarily know, they will pull together different code to create the code they want for their particular app, and the coders don't necessarily know all of the functions of all of the code that they are compiling. So maybe there's a bit of education that could happen there, or at least on the on Google's end, verification of code that goes into the apps.
Yeah, I mean, that's the argument for dictatorships, right? Is that they're so much more safe. You know what you have to expect. Yeah. You don't have to do a lot of the thinking.
Right.
And a beneficent dictatorship. I know where you're going here, Merritt. A beneficent dictator. That's the important thing.
And of course, that's Google.
Yes. Well, it could be in this case, right? I mean, that's the question, is which way are they going to lean, and are they beneficent? I think...
Keep it open, Google. Keep it open.
I think these are in my opinion, these are the wrong lessons to learn from this. I think what these guys were after was saying, hey, you should be always aware that applications could do this, because even in the more locked down versions, unintended consequences can happen. Things can slip through. You know, apps can get hacked. We had the application store hacked in iPhone too. So the point of this shouldn't be so much the relative merits of the different app stores, but remembering that, you know, it is the internet and your data is at risk when it's connected to a network, and you just need to learn about it and be careful and have some responsibility.
Yeah, and this is the same thing as reading the Bill of Rights that every software gives you that you have to agree to, the terms and conditions for downloading any software,
yes,
any
you
app.
Must, you should
read
all of
read
this
and agree to our terms and conditions. Who does
Can
that?
Can you see my eyes rolling back in my head? I'm like, are you kidding me? That's like right next to the dishwasher manual and things I'm going to get on
right.
top
Download
of
that. The right, but this is it's the same. This is the same problem.
It's actually a lot easier to be safe on the internet than it is to read every EULA. Although there is the EULAizer.
Yeah.
The EULAizer software will read it for you and alert you of anything you need to know.
So, okay, I'm sending that to Aunt Betty.
Yeah. All right. Black Hat, of course, causing all kinds of fun conversations, which it is meant to do. And in another demonstration, a man named Barnaby Jack, a researcher who was prevented from presenting last year by AT&T, was able to finally do his presentation, where he hacked into two automated teller machines, two ATMs, and allowed him to spew out dozens of crisp $50 bills.
I wanted to be there. No.
Yes, these are ATMs that he purchased so that he could do research on them. But he says he's 4 for 4. Every ATM that he has purchased, he has been able to hack into. In one of the cases, he had two on stage, Triton and Tranex. The Tranex hack was conducted using an authentication bypass vulnerability, which could be accessed over the internet. So he never touched the machine. Yep. He just war dialed until he found the proper protocol for that machine and then was able to conduct a remote hack. All he needed was the IP address. And he was able to get in and make it spit out a bunch of cash.
I looked at those machines and they looked like they were straight out of some bodega from 1984.
No,
but that's part of the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, part of the point is that he's getting machines that are at liquor stores, that are, you know, at a restaurant, at some kind of little shop or a street corner, at a mall. He's getting the shops that are not the bank ATMs, but the ATMs that we run across. When you go to a store and you're like, oh, I don't have cash. This store requires cash. I have to take money out of the ATM.
Now, the Tranex folks have been advising anyone who uses a Tranex machine to disable the remote system. So to help protect against this, the Triton machine, he was able to hack by coming up with a USB stick and accessing it from the front. So you had to have a key
or know how to pick locks.
Well, it was a $10 key. You can buy the key for $10, and it's the same kind of key that opens up a bunch of things. And all of the Triton machines had the same key.
That's smart.
Okay, that's a problem.
Isn't it? They said something. The company says that they do have an upgrade key, lock and key kit that people can purchase if they'd like to have something that's.
And they also distributed a patch last November so that only digitally signed code could run on the ATM. So even if somebody did get the thing open and put the USB stick, if it's updated with the patch, this wouldn't work. So both these vulnerabilities have protections already. But you got to figure a lot of these bodegas, a lot of these liquor store machines don't. And you're at some risk in this because the malicious software that could be put on there might collect ATM codes, might collect PIN codes.
Right. The machines do keep a record of that. So you
should be wise of this as well. It's not just for the bodega store owners.
Yeah.
Bodega store is redundant, isn't it? It is, in fact.
Yeah.
I was translating.
It is a bodega store, Tom.
Or a bodacious
store. It is a bodega
store.
Establishment.
Right. Not a bodega. It's not bodega. A mall.
You apparently have not watched as much Law and Order as I have. It's a bodega.
Exactly. I've only heard it in the Jonathan Colton song about IKEA. All right. On to Amazon fulfilling the predictions from yesterday and rolling out a smaller and lighter Kindle. One is $189, and so it's pretty much the same price. That has Wi-Fi in it, though, and 3G. And for $139, for $50 less, you can get one that just has Wi-Fi.
And it's smaller. Cool. So we're talking about 20% smaller, a 4-point-something-inch screen. But they've also made a lot of improvements. They say it's 50% better contrast, 20% faster, and about 15% lighter. And they likened it to a paperback when I talked to them about it. And they said it's just, you know, the kind of thing you would stick in your pocket. And $139, that is really breaking down the barrier to entry, especially when they said they sold three times as many Kindles when they dropped the price down to that $189 mark that you mentioned. This is all about price point.
Now, it's smaller in form factor, but it's not, the screen isn't smaller, right?
I think it's smaller. When I talked to them, they said it was smaller.
It's still I thought the screen was still large, but they reduced the weight. But I'm actually a little confused now.
I haven't seen it because when I spoke with them yesterday evening, they said specifically, I said, so it's a smaller screen, 4-point-something? And she said, yeah. But you know what? Let's double check that.
Yeah, well, let's just go to Amazon because everyone in the chat room is saying, no, the screen's still 6 inches. It's not any smaller.
The device is now 5 inches. The screen is still 6.
It will have to be redacted later. Thank you all for saving me, chat room. Interesting. I think the PR person was confused, too.
Yeah, these things happen.
Yeah. Edit. And the screen is the same size.
That's all right. I take my lumps with me.
All right.
It is interesting, though, because I think when we're talking about the consumer space in this, and I was actually kind of into a smaller screen as much as we all read on our phones. I was thinking, oh, a smaller screen, that's basically like reading on an Evo. And I think many people are accepting that that is a new format and the portability wouldn't be so bad. But it really does seem like price point is the big story. And now a $99 reader coming out as well. Right, Tom?
Yeah, this is from Copia, a subsidiary of DMC Worldwide. And if you really must have your smaller screen, this one's only 5 inches, but it's a color e-reader, and it is coming to market later this year. The Vaporous later this year announcement. This is not the first $99 e-reader to be announced ever. None of them that I know of have come to market, or if they have, they've been very underwhelming. But this one's color, so if it were to come to market at $99, that'd be pretty awesome.
And again, also, social networking built into it. Twitter and Facebook feeds are something else that they're promising for this, you know, under $100 price point.
Which is added usability. And it might lead people, the lower price point, the color, the social networking might drive more people to it, and that's what they're trying to do. The more people they get, that the lower that price can stay.
I think the $99 price point is the one that will really flood the market. That's when people will start going in droves to buy these things.
One price point to rule them all.
I think that's why Amazon is predicting that the e-books will overtake paperback sales within the next couple of years.
Yep.
And we're already seeing them overtake hardback sales. In fact, The Guardian is reporting that Stieg Larsson's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, combined with The Girl Who Played with Fire and The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nets, has made Stieg Larsson, the late, sadly, Stieg Larsson, the first author to sell more than 1 million e-books on Amazon.
Congratulations. Mm.
He hit the timing right for ebooks, for the rest of his life. Such a weird e-books. Story. But just so you know, on the plane, I am reading The Girl with the Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, and it just turned that corner. You know how all his books turn that corner from confusing to amazing?
I don't, because I haven't read any of them.
What? Tom, how can I even speak with you? Only television and the sci-fi? What, no reading?
I'm reading The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein right now.
Good book.
Come on, pop culture reading. Come on.
Read along with the rest of America, Tom.
He doesn't need me. He sold 1 million ebooks, for goodness sake.
I don't know. I keep looking around. I'm gonna keep watching this and the ebooks and see how I'm really interested to see how it develops, like so many other people, I'm sure. But I look around when I'm on Muni or when I'm out and about, and I don't see people with e-readers.
Yeah.
I see people with paperbacks.
Still, yeah.
You know, I understand ebooks outselling hardcovers. That does not confuse me. You never see someone reading a hardcover book out somewhere. Paperbacks, yes, but not hardcover. So I'm really waiting to see what's going to happen there.
All right.
It's in New York and on the planes. I see the e-readers.
I see them on the planes. Yeah, I see them on the planes. And I think it's going to take that price point to really kick them over the top where you start to see them everywhere.
Yep.
Well, this episode is not brought to you by whom you might think it was brought to you by based on that conversation. It is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is all about making domain registration and service simple. And if you've registered your domain with someone else and you thought that it was a little complicated, or maybe you just didn't like the process, or you thought, why does domain registration have to be hard? Well, it doesn't. You don't have to take 50 clicks to register a domain name. That's why we started registering domain names at Hover.com here at Twit. Hover doesn't sell a ton of services. They focus on making it easy to register a domain. They used to be called Domain Direct, if you happen to know as that. They've been selling domains since 1997. And one of the things that really impresses me is they have a no-hold policy for customer service calls. If you call anytime Monday through Friday between 9 a.m. and 8 p.m., they will not put you on hold. They will only take your call right away and help you out. You get a live person. So try it out. Simple domain registration, simple domain transfer. www.tnt.hover.com is the URL to go to. And the next time you have a domain to register, use the offer code for TNT, just TNT for Tech News Today, and you get 10% off. So check them out, www.tnt.hover.com. Well, Mr. Steve Ballmer is now making the rounds after the Microsoft earnings report, and a lot of people are asking about this whole tablet game. Everybody's accusing him of being left behind. Microsoft's been hammering tablets since the 2001 CES. Ballmer said today they'll be shipping as soon as they are ready. he offered a few details on the products, but he did say
that is prophetic.
It is job one urgency. No one is sleeping at the switch. They've sold certainly more than I'd like them to have sold, he said, referring to Apple. But they're coming after the iPad, and they think that they're going to pass it up. We're in the process of doing that as we speak. We're working with our hardware partners. We're tuning Windows 7. So they know they're behind, and they think they can catch up.
And maybe this will keep Ballmer in the game for another year.
We'll see. What do you think, Beck?
I think it's kind of criminal. Poor Microsoft. Did I ever think I would say this? Poor Microsoft. They announced tablets way back in early 2000. Then it comes to now, and they're playing catch up. What's up with that? And then my other.
Microsoft got to her.
And she's down.
They killed her Skype connection.
And another.
Don't you dare criticize. Actually, no, she was being sympathetic. So it must have been Apple that killed her connection. All right. Well,
she was on a Mac.
I don't want you to sympathize.
We'll get back to her in a second, hopefully. But first of all, a White House proposal would ease FBI access to records of internet activity. Now, the way things work right now, there is a law that says the FBI doesn't have to get a search warrant in order to get name, address, length of service, and toll billing records. This mostly goes for phone companies, right? But people have been using it for ISPs. So they can get name, address, length of service. But when the FBI asks for toll billing records, they're thinking, hey, we want to get IP addresses, email addresses.
We want to know who has been contacting
they were sent
whom.
To. Yeah, yes. Exactly. Because toll billing records, if you think about it, that's your bill. And your bill has every phone number you've called. Yeah. So what the FBI thinks is, well, then we should have the list of all the email addresses you've sent email to.
Or all of the websites that you've
looked you've visited.
Yeah.
It's the same thing to them.
Yeah.
ISPs are saying, wait a minute, toll billing records are very different than asking us to turn over logs of people's IP addresses to spy on them about what email addresses they have been sending to. We don't think the law covers that. So
you should have to get a warrant through a judge.
Yes. The White House has said they're going to add the words, or they would ask Congress to add the words electronic communication transactional records to the list of items that are approved to get without a judge's approval. That's vague.
It is very vague. Electronic communication, I wonder now that phone communications are becoming are digital, cell phone, so many stuff on Skype, I guess, like anything that you do, I wonder how much of that would be encompassed by these vague words.
Yeah, could they get other things that they couldn't get off of your old phone records this way? Becky's back. You're alive. I'm glad you didn't suffer some sort of horrible...
Although she looks like she's been disturbed by a wormhole in the space-time.
Oh. Just when I go back to her, she goes away again. Anyway, the problem with this electronic communication transactional records is that it doesn't have any meaning. It doesn't have any definition. There's no precedence for that. It could be made to mean anything. What the White House, I think, is doing here is providing cover for ISPs. Because several ISPs are giving them the information they want, but others are holding back saying, we don't think it's legal for us to give this information, and we don't want to get sued.
And several ISPs have been sued already for giving information to the government. And so it's the question of, okay, what are we going to do? We're going to try, like you said, to give cover for all of them across the board so they'll all know that it's okay to give us this information.
Right.
And nobody will get sued.
So, Becky, you are back and you're alive.
And that's why I would marry Steve Ballmer if he asked me.
Well, thank you for that, Becky. And I hope he'll seriously consider your proposal.
You know, this whole thing about the security letters, it is limited to, in my research, Kiki, to answer your question, 4 specific pieces of information, and that does not include the content of the email. It's really more like who it was sent to, where it was sent, when it was sent, really marking data. So getting back to that, I think it is fairly limited.
Email address, and we talked a little bit about this while we were reconnecting with you. Internet addresses, IP addresses, web history are different than toll billing records. It's almost accidental that toll billing records included the phone numbers of the people you were calling. I think email addresses are a lot more personal than phone numbers. At least people consider them that way. So this providing cover to the ISPs, I think, is going to create a whole new conversation about what actually should be revealed without a judge's approval.
You know, one of the other things mentioned in a lot of the articles was that sources from the ISPs who did not want to be named say they're already complying. They're just very quietly complying. They don't want to get their names in the press, but they don't want to get in trouble with the government. And they're just like, fine, go.
All right.
So, well, it's happening.
Yeah, this news is way too disturbing. Let's get excited about a new phone.
Okay, that makes everything better.
And let's make several of you in the audience really excited because this new phone is from BlackBerry. Research in Motion. The BlackBerry 9800 is expected to be launched at an event in New York City on Tuesday next week. AT&T is expected to be the exclusive carrier for the new phone. And this is hopefully going to be the new operating system, BlackBerry OS 6, which makes it hang in the game with the Droid X and the iPhone.
And most importantly, it's got a touch screen and the tactile CrackBerry keyboard that you cannot get, you know, live without. So the combination of the two is what BlackBerry is really pinning their hopes on.
And I think it'll go well. I think BlackBerry users are probably going to upgrade, and you know, they're going to just find new usable features.
Well, Rim has needed a splashy phone mm-hmm. to put them in the conversation. We get people emailing in like, why don't you talk about BlackBerry a lot? And the reason is no one else is really talking about BlackBerry a lot. There hasn't been a phone that they've had the splash around. And we only have so much time to talk about, you know, the news of the day. We're not a cell phone podcast. So we're going to hit the ones that are hottest. And the sad fact is BlackBerry hasn't had a hot phone in a while. So this is their next entrant, the 9800, or what's the other word they're calling it? We don't know for sure, but there's a rumor about it being called like something, and I can't remember what now.
The BlackBerry Touch?
I think it was the BlackBerry Touch.
No, I don't know. I don't think it was that specific. I think it was one of those weird like cheddar cheese derivatives, like the Tillamook or the, you know, some weird thing. But you know,
the BlackBerry Winsleydale will be announced on Tuesday.
I think it is. So, who comes up with this stuff? Who are these marketing creeps?
Yeah, all of this though is still a rumor, though.
Yes, this is. There will be an announcement on Tuesday. We don't actually know what the announcement is.
They have a real product coming out. I know that for sure because I had to get my mailing address in. So I shall hopefully have one for you soon, whatever it is they have. Now, one thing I'm really interested in about OS 6 from BlackBerry is, you know, we talked about this a little bit and just kind of glossed over it a few weeks ago. And we had some interesting feedback, and I really want to hear from users what they think. And you can send email to the show or to me through Twitter and BWorley. But remember that BlackBerry bought Dash Navigation, and they were the ones who had a GPS device that would use cellular networks to report back data, and that way they could create real-time mapping of traffic loads of all their users. But the problem was Dash didn't have enough users to have any meaningful traffic information. Well, BlackBerry bought that software, and they're integrating it into OS 6. That will be on by default. You can opt out of it, but basically what it means is everyone who's running that OS 6 with GPS...
Hold on. Your Skype connection is breaking up, and you said
be sending back all their location.
Okay, yeah, we're losing you on the Skype connection, Becky.
I'm here now, Tom. Sorry
you said,
about that.
You said, and what it means for everyone is. So what exactly does it mean for everyone?
Let me pick it up from right there in case we have a nice edit point. So what that means for everyone is that all of your data, your locational data, will be sent back to the BlackBerry databases to create traffic information, but they know where you are at all times, and that's being logged. Does that bother people?
No.
Some people.
Well, yes, it will bother people. Mm-hmm. It doesn't bother me at all, though.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Because you don't use it.
You do need, yeah, we talked about this a lot. When the Dash was out, and the point was, it's a trade-off. You get to make it. You get to decide, do you trust these people to have your data in exchange for having all of this awesome traffic data coming back to you? I mean, you know,
it's a fair exchange. I think you should have to opt into it, is my personal opinion,
rather than opt out.
Yeah,
well, you don't have to buy the device. You're opting in by buying the device.
Yeah, but if you upgrade to OS 6.
Well, I see what you're saying is if you just go and upgrade to OS 6, you're still trying to upgrade to OS 6, but your expectation may not be that it's going to be doing this, right?
I still think you
should be responsible for your device. You know, you bought it, you upgraded, you decided to add the new firmware. If it was pushed to you without your knowledge and started collecting data, I'd feel differently. So there is a situation where it could be a problem, that's for sure.
That being said, I would love the real-time traffic data. Bring it.
Yeah, absolutely. I see it listed as the BlackBerry Torch and the BlackBerry Slider. The Torch? Really?
Ooh.
See, that's why I thought it was Touch, because that makes a whole lot more sense than Torch. Mm. All right, let's move on to Congress feeling the pinch of the economy, saying, you know that ban in 2006 on internet gambling? Maybe we should overturn that and tax the crap out of stuff. It's exactly what they said. That was quote from the House Financial Services. No, it wasn't. But House Financial Services Committee has approved a bill that will now go to the House floor to effectively legalize online poker and non-sports betting so that they can bring all those web-based casinos back on shore. And another bill would direct the Treasury Department to, or same bill, would direct the Treasury Department to license and regulate internet gambling operations so that the Internal Revenue Service can tax it.
Okay, horse trade. What do you think? We'll give you online gambling if you give us net neutrality and no internet sales tax. Deal?
Wait, say that again?
Interesting.
It has nothing to do with the story. I'm just saying, as a consumer, I'll take your online gambling, be okay, but just leave my internet sales tax alone. I don't want to be paying any internet sales tax. Get your money from the gamblers.
Okay, I like it. So you're saying, go ahead and tax the online gambling. Just give up on the internet sales tax and make all your money there. I think they should allow sports betting then.
Well, that's fine. That's why I was throwing in net neutrality, and I thought we could sort of really just lump it all together.
Yeah, I like the way you think, Whirly, on this one, definitely. All right, and speaking of how we all think, the Associated Press is reporting that the adult industry has found a new market for porn on the iPhone using the FaceTime video conference feature.
Yes, advertisements in more than 5 cities on Craigslist asking for FaceTime sex chat participants who will be given their own iPhone 4 in order to participate in this new medium. Always the innovators, the porn.
The only thing about this for me is
But, you know, I have to wonder.
I was going to say, the only thing about this for me is that it took the Associated Press story says that it didn't take them long. Well, this thing launched it back in June. Why are we just hearing about it now?
This should have been away.
Usually this stuff happens immediately.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. I wonder if they were waiting to see how it was going to shake out with all of the APIs. Maybe, you know, would FaceTime be able to interface with Skype so they wouldn't have to buy the chatters, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
Their own phones. They could just put them on a computer with a webcam and then have them go to FaceTime. But now that they're realizing that the APIs have somehow disappeared and it's just FaceTime to FaceTime, well, they got to get some booty time to booty time going directly.
I am terrified of the absolute mobile nature of all of this. Absolutely terrified. I mean, okay, going back to public transportation, I really don't want to look over somebody's shoulder and, like, see FaceTime, booty time.
Yeah.
Not into that.
That's
not interested.
That's true. I think maybe what took this so long is that you can't hold the phone left-handed and keep the connection.
Right.
So that's all I'm going to say about that. All right, let's move on to the lightning
round.
These are headlines of the day that we want to make you aware of. Let's kick it off with RIM still in the news. A few days ago, RIM, the makers of the BlackBerry, purchased a new domain name, blackpad.com. Barring some change of business strategy involving AC/DC or the Oakland Raiders, I'm going to surmise that we have a name for the rumored forthcoming BlackBerry tablet.
Moving on, while Nintendo Wii sales remain strong, a dip in Nintendo DS sales and a strong yen nudged the console maker into posting its first quarterly loss in more than 2 years. That's sad. Investors were only told, your earnings are in another castle.
Sony turned a profit in its first quarter thanks to strong sales of computers and TVs. Sony also sold 2.4 million PlayStation 3 consoles compared with 1.1 million last year. Price drop, and sold 24.8 million game titles for the PlayStation 3, up from about half that a year ago. Losing Linux installs apparently didn't hurt anything.
Boo! Apple is finally looking into user complaints about issues with running iOS 4, or we use the term running loosely, on the iPhone 3G. According to the Wall Street Journal, the company is investigating the myriad complaints that have surfaced since the June release of iOS 4. We're guessing they're holding the phone wrong during install.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mark Zuckerberg, in response, is rolling Android these days. According to his Facebook profile page, the Zuck has installed the Facebook app for Android, and the other end are hoping he'll see the failings of the Facebook offering on Android, and they're hoping that it gets a little upgrade to compete with its more polished iPhone cousin.
Yeah, I'm one of those people. Okay. A recent announcement at the 2010 SIGGRAPH conference adds another dimension to video gaming. Temperature. Temperature panels on game controllers will increase or decrease their temperature using the Peltier effect by about 10 degrees in either direction in response to action within the game. I'm still waiting for that smell-o-vision like you, Tom.
For certain things.
For certain things.
Maybe not for FaceTime. Yeah. According to the Wall Street Journal, investigators have found concrete evidence on computers that links Bradley Manning with the war logs given to WikiLeaks. Now investigators are going after anyone who might have helped Manning get the info to WikiLeaks. And I think that's the last we're going to... This has just become a political story, so I think we can put an underline on it there. That's you know, unless there's some more about the protocols or whatnot on the computer side of things. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think the technology was amazing in that it was this new way to get information distributed. But I think that really this has become so mainstream, it's like... Tech? Not anymore.
Well, let's move to the calendar then. Big day tomorrow, right?
Yeah, 7:30. It's Sysadmin Appreciation Day. Get them something a little geeky. Show your love.
So not just flowers.
Well, it depends on what kind of flowers. Maybe if they're freeze-dried in nitrogen.
Right, that could work. Okay, that could be good.
Yeah. Little Think Geek gift certificate at the last minute if you're really desperate.
That's a smart one.
Mm-hmm. Chris Eliason, don't know if you remember him, Tom, the original customer service guy from Comcast.
Wait, I thought his name was Frank.
Frank.
Oh, sorry, Frank. I'm sorry, Frank.
Yeah. Yes. Because I have been helped by Frank.
I have too. Yeah. He's great. Frank's great.
I mean, it's such an interesting concept that that a company with such bad reputation for customer service innovated something that back in 2008, he was really the first guy who kind of just started reaching out to all the people who were complaining on Twitter about Comcast service. And that has spawned a whole new revolution, really, for consumers who are looking to get justice. And I think that's one of the most interesting uses of Twitter. You've complained on Twitter, or how did you make
I've made some complaints on Twitter, and then I've had different Comcast care. There's Comcast cares was Frank originally, and then there's now like Comcast Bill and other Comcast folks. I have to say, Frank was always the most forthcoming. They were all trying to be helpful, but he was willing to just put it all aside and say, "No BS. This is what's happening. I'm going to try to find it out for you." He was really good, so I'm going to miss him. Bill Gerth is taking over, and in fact, they've already changed the profile. If you go to Comcast cares on Twitter.
Frank will be at Citicorp Bank, so if you have problems with them, you can go
connect. See, I don't use any Citicorp products, but good to know.
If you complain on Twitter, maybe you'll be finding Frank there.
All right, let's check our voicemails. We got one from someone who always trusts the first result of a Google search, and I think he makes a pretty interesting case why.
Hey, guys, this is Jose. Calling in reference to the show for, Tuesday, where you guys were saying that the students trust the first link on Google. That kind of happens to me also. Google is my marriage counselor. Whenever my wife and I have differing opinions on a variety of topics, we run to Google, do a search, and whatever comes up first is what we pick. It's quite interesting. Also, move the show so that it's on my feed by 5. Love you guys. Bye.
I thought Becky would like that last little point.
That is so awesome. Well, it is kind of random, so at least you have a chance of being right 50% of the time, right?
You have a secondary an impartial arbiter.
Well, the first result for most terms probably isn't completely random, but at the same time, Google does mess with their algorithms a bit to try and get the best results, results out to the public.
Kiki, you married?
Yes.
You are? Okay, well, then I was going to... I hate to ask you such personal questions, but aren't all marriage arguments totally random? So whether or not Google has logic in their search results,
all right,
no marital arguments have any logic, so it doesn't matter. You were speaking so logically. Either you're in a really good one or else...
I'm married to a search engine guru.
There you go.
Oh, well, see, you just don't trust the search engine.
I just don't trust the search engine.
My husband's going to tweak the algorithm so he wins every time.
Yeah, I don't trust
SEO
it.
SEO on your fight results.
Yeah, right. All right. You know, before we get to the emails, someone in the chat room, and I apologize for not noting your chat room name and giving you credit, pointed out that the Huffington Post is now saying that Google is again blocked in China on the mainland. Google says people in mainland China are being blocked from using the search engine. They posted a Thursday notice about the new barrier without other details. A Google spokesperson in the U.S. says he is still trying to gather information about the situation. And Google has been officially approved by China. China had an official announcement saying they had approved Google's internet license there. So it'll be interesting to find out why they are reported to be blocked in China.
Yeah. And the Wall Street Journal has it as well. So this is just so schizophrenic. I mean, at one point it was the redirect to the Hong Kong Google site, and that was the workaround that Google was going for in China. And then it seemed like they'd been canonized. This is just getting weirder by the day.
Yeah. All right, on to the emails. By the way, if you want to give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW is our number, 260-TNT-SHOW, or you can send us an email, tnt@twit.tv. You want to lead us off with the first one there, Dr. Kiki?
I certainly will. Hey, TNT crew. I just wanted to put my 2 cents in about Google Games. The way you guys talked about it on yesterday's episode, it sounded more like Google was becoming more like Yahoo than like Facebook, especially since it seems like Google doesn't want to put it all together in one area like Facebook. Yahoo started out as a search engine, too, and then added different sections like movies, games, news, etc. That's my idea. Love the show. Alex.
Well, thanks, Alex. That's an interesting point. Yahoo actually started out as a directory of sites and then sort of became a search engine later and then became this, you know, sort
the
of
social,
quasi-content thing. But in a way, Google is imitating Yahoo, I think, more than they're imitating Facebook. Yeah. Because Yahoo has dabbled in social networking as well, but never really cracked it.
Yeah.
But he makes a really interesting point about their delivery mechanism. And I'm going to make an analogy to old school delivery of information. So I think what he's saying that makes sense is that Yahoo, that Facebook is like a TV newscast where they tell you the linear progression of how things are going to go and how you're going to get at information. And that what Google's going to do is give you more like a newspaper where you can flop around and go straight to the comics if you want, or you can start on the front page. And I think that's an interesting distinction to give users more freedom, and it fits Google's profile and their corporate ethos a little more too. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm.
All right, Becky, you got the next one for us. You want to read what Chris G wrote?
I will. This goes with our outsourcing rants that we don't necessarily rant ourselves, but we love it when our viewers rant. Chris G wrote in about a book agent named Andrew Wiley who decided to bypass publishers, going straight to Amazon's digital ebook store. The way you extolled Andrew Wiley for bypassing publishers, calling the house's middlemen, simply shows a vast misunderstanding of the publishing industry on your part. At this point, yes, the profit margins for these classics books are huge for publishers. He's talking about the older or deceased authors who were being posted by Andrew Wiley on the ebook store on Amazon. However, they do not simply pocket this money. They invest in books by unknown younger authors. It was also troubling that you boiled down a publisher's role as being simply gatekeepers of quality. Publishers add an incredible amount of value through editing, publicity, marketing, and production. And then he adds, this was interesting, I didn't know this, Random House has fought back by refusing to bid on any of Mr. Wiley's new clients. So there's quite a bit of leverage. And then just a little thing here. Secondly, I was a little bothered by the lack of outrage yesterday when you reported on Apple rejecting apps from Time Inc. And I just like the lack of outrage. We got to work on more outrage.
No, I'm used to that criticism. Why were you outraged about the thing I'm outraged about?
And then he was very sweet. He said, this is my rant. I don't need to be rude. Books and publishing are an important part of my life. And I do enjoy your show very much. So thanks, Christy. I learned a lot. I think that he makes really excellent points, especially about the business model of publishing and how it plays such an important role. You haven't seen any direct to Amazon books on Oprah's book list yet, have you?
No, because she's part of the publishing industry. She's got ties to them. They're advertisers. Why would she waste her time and money on an individual like that? I think that the counter argument here is very interesting as well, which is we always have the industry, whether it's publishing or music or anything else, say, well, how are you going to make a lot of money on something if we're not there to promote it, to push it, to get it on Oprah, to get it out there? And the fact of the matter is, most every author, rock star, independent filmmaker does not make a lot of money. It's a lottery. And only a very few end up making it big enough to make a lot of money.
Yep.
The argument against this is, in the current system, if we bypass publishers, more people can make more smaller amounts of money. So instead of having virtually no one making money and a big spike at the end making a ton of money, what if you did get rid of the publishing system? And sure, you're not going to make these piles and piles of cash for anyone anymore, but you have more people making more money than they would have anyway because they find their niches. They find their interesting markets to market to. So that's where I think this debate, and I'm not saying Chris G is wrong here. I'm just saying, like, it's not just about, like, oh, the publishers are worthless versus, or the publishers are absolutely necessary. There's a model that has never existed before that right. can exist now because of the internet.
There's got to be some happy medium somewhere, because there are definitely roles for editors, for promoters, for publishers. I mean, there are those roles still there in this new landscape. So, it's just a matter of working it all out, and people are getting just upset.
I'm very amused right now because several people in the chat room are like, it's socialism. But it's not socialism. Socialism is when one group takes all the money and divvies it out. And publishers would be more akin to socialism, though they're not, than the model I'm talking about. The model I'm talking about is the freest of markets, where, yes, you don't have one person making tons of money and everyone else shut out of the market. You have lots of people making money. And I know why they say it's socialism, because I said, well, everybody makes a little bit less money. This isn't taxing.
Why did you say that? Why do you presume that everyone will make a little less money? I mean,
because
will make a ton of money.
What the publishers are saying is, if you take us out of the equation, no one will make these piles and piles of money. And I think they're probably right. Without that old system of being able to have mass media and Oprah's book club and advertisements on Clear Channel radio stations, mm-hmm. you can't generate that stratospheric stardom. Maybe you can, but it's less likely.
Individuals will absolutely find the same marketing channels. It'll just be disintermediated, and it'll take a while to get there.
Yeah. So there's nothing socialist about it, though, because you're right, that could happen, but it's a totally open marketplace. It's just a matter of whether you need to prop up old business models to continue a revenue stream to a certain company, or whether you free the market and open it up enough that lots of individuals can make more money than they would have been able to make in the past.
Or nothing.
And don't call Tom a socialist.
Well, no, it's a misinterpretation. You can call me a socialist all day long. I don't care about that. It's just a misinterpretation of, because it's exactly the opposite, right? It's more.
I love it when your hot buttons are pushed. No. I love it when Dudley Do-Right gets all hot under the collar.
Don't call me Dudley. No, I'm just
kidding. Don't threaten my free market.
All right. I get to read an email now, and then we wrap up. Jim wrote in from Marion, Iowa. Love the show. I don't care much when you have the show since I listened to it the next day. However, I have a request that you speak louder after the 30-minute mark. You see, I listen to your show while I'm running, and after 30 minutes, my sweat gets into my earbuds and decreases their performance. So if you could just start shouting after 30 minutes, that would be great. All right, Jim. Hope you're getting your email. Hope you hear it fine.
Thanks, Jim.
We're past the 30-minute mark. I know we didn't hit it exactly. But there you go.
At 30 minutes, we'll just call Tom a socialist and he'll start yelling.
Start the cool down now. Yeah, you thought I was just upset about the chat room. I'm just helping Jim out. He couldn't hear the conversation otherwise. All right.
All good.
Thanks, you guys. Becky, thank you so much for flying, literally, to do the show.
Well, apologies for my bandwidth issues. I shall be clear and present next week.
And it's always fabulous to have you along on Thursdays, Dr. Kiki.
Thank you. I enjoy it.
Your show on the live stream will be coming up right after ours, right?
Yeah, 4 p.m. Pacific time, Dr. Kiki Science Hour.
And you can find us at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us TNT@twit.tv or give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. Call us. Bye.